And I will tell you that most writers are not going to buy your book. So I buy indie books because I read 2 books a week at this point, and I never look at whether or not it's indie or not. But if you're only marketing to other writers, you're really limiting your audience.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I'm here, as always, Nikki P. Today's guest, we have Tim Imholt. Why don't you give us an introduction to yourself, Tim?
Hi. So, my professional career has been a little bit scattered. When I got out of high school, I actually was in the Army for a bit. Got out of the Army, went to college, got my PhD in physics. Went to work after my PhD. Wound up working with the fine folks at MIT in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in between some stuff in the Department of Physics, the Institute for Soldier Nanotechnologies, which is primarily where I was. Occasionally over at Lincoln Labs, doing some of the more classified oriented stuff. Then wound up leaving there, went over to a large defense contractor, and I was involved in the upgrade to the battle management system to the Patriot missile system. Because at the time, the Patriot missile system was still using AND and OR chips inside of it instead of using something that was created in at least the last decade of the 20th century. It's now been very updated, so it's nowhere near what it was. It's much, much, much better. Left there, went to work with some venture guys. I was doing some consulting work for a bit because I realized you can buy things with money. And I have 3 kids that someday want to go to school. So you do eventually have to go and sort of grow up, as they say, and do something responsible. I got the chance to start my own company a couple of years ago. We're on year 3.5 now, I think. But what a physicist really does is not, I mean, we don't go in the lab and take data anymore. We design experiments, sure, but we're not going to sit in a lab and write down data. Computers take it all, right? Nobody does that anymore. Once the computers take it, somebody has to analyze it, and then you have to figure out what that data set tells you. So my primary expertise was in a field called predictive analytics, where you take giant piles of data and try to figure out what it all means and where it's going to go, right? What influences are on it that sends it some direction or another. Which is now largely being called artificial intelligence, which 20 years ago was called predictive analytics. Figure out whatever you want to call it. But it basically takes messy data sets and tries to find patterns inside those messy data sets, which is important to marketing. And we'll get to that part in a minute. Because if you don't know what your data is telling you, it's almost impossible for you to make active decisions on it. Right. So you can get as messy a data set as you want, and a scientist can hopefully sit down and figure out how to do it. That's kind of where I spent most of my career. Hope that answers your question in a really long-winded kind of fashion.
No, it does. So you're someone who appreciates, the numbers tell you what the numbers tell you, even if your eyes are wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I never try to go into a data set and say, okay, here's what this data is telling me. I'm like, okay, here's the data. Let's figure it out. Right. And so often people will look at like a statistic on the news or something and go, it means this. Okay, what data got you to that answer? And can I see how you analyzed it? Because, there's lies, damn lies, and statistics, right? So if we look at data sets properly and understand that no data set exists in an isolation, at least in the real world, take economics, for instance, right? You always look at these economic numbers and people are like, oh, inflation, but it excludes food and fuel and residence. Well, that's not really an inflation number that matters to most people, right? that's a number that nobody cares about, right? That's how we keep it down to 2%. But in the predictive analytic field, and you might ask how that pertains to marketing, what we've done is at my company, we've applied it to the social media space. And what we can do now is we can analyze the large slush pile of stuff that comes out of social media to figure out what hashtags people are viewing most often and what hashtags people will be viewing across the next couple of hours. And get those hashtags set properly on people's posts so that they can get the maximum viewership and engagement possible. So we took a big science project and applied it to social media and built a whole app out of it that actually works pretty well to get decent engagement rates on social media. And if you want to grow, engagement's the key, right? You've got to have an active, engaged audience.
I argue with people all the time. It's like, you know, it's all well and good that you keep hitting repost on this, but you know what would be even better is if you commented on it and said something so people might actually get a chance to see it, because we all know the algorithm doesn't care if they don't.
It does actually like quote posts even better, though. The repost, it doesn't care about quite as much, but a quote post, it cares about a lot more.
Yeah. Well, once again, it's the acting engagement that they're looking for, not the, you know, so just the reposting is the same thing as like a like. It's just a, I don't know, vanity, I guess.
And I see all this stuff lately with people like, oh, I have, you know, 100,000 followers, or worse, I get direct message of people trying to sell me followers, which, by the way, if anybody ever tries to buy followers, please don't. It's the worst idea in the history of like anything.
It doesn't serve you. It doesn't serve you as a person, because it's like a qualified versus an unqualified lead. That's the most unqualified you could possibly get.
And they're usually coming out of bot farms in South America or India someplace. So the point is that an engaged following really matters. And like, here I am, a goofy scientist talking about sci-fi books, Dungeons and Dragons, and my kids. And I've got almost 12,200 on Twitter alone. And a year and a half ago, I was at like 1800. Right. So, if I can grow, anybody can do it. You've just got to have, you know, something out there that you want to talk about, that you're passionate about. And then you got to get those hashtags set properly. Once all that's done, you will grow. It does happen.
Well, so we kind of glossed over it a little bit there. We covered the fact, you know, you're a scientist, you have this background of this, but here I am. I talk to creators about marketing their books. And how did you get to the world where you decided to make something to help people in that field?
Well, I've actually written 7 fiction novels myself. So with my career, everybody's like, oh, where'd you find the time? I'm like, I get bored really easy, so I have to go find stuff to do. I started writing books when my now ex-wife was traveling back and forth to Japan for work. And at the time, I had 2 kids below the age of 4 at home. So it was like, I can't, you know, once they go to bed, there's nothing to do. And they go to bed at like 7. So what are you going to do, right? So I've been a sort of a voracious reader my entire life. And wound up as a subject matter expert for an A-list author on a book called Zero Day by David Baldacci. And I got the chance to kind of talk to him about his process. And I complained. I'm like, you know, there's no books, Leo, like this that are out there. I really want to read a book like that. He goes, well, shut the hell up and write one. I was like, huh, okay. That's an interesting way to look at it. So I did. And now 7 books later, what I've realized is that the hardest part about a book is not writing it, it's marketing it. So I looked around at the apps that were on the market to help you do that, especially in a social media case, because let's face it, as a book writer, I'm not buying TV ads, right? I'm not buying big magazine ads. I'm buying social media space. So I looked around at the products that were on the market to do that, and I kind of stopped and went, these are all shockingly expensive for individual creators. I mean, they're $150, $250, $500 a month. Take your Hootsuite and your Sprout Socials, and they're, you know, 200, 250, 500 a month. Some of them are 750. And, you know, what's an indie author expect to make a month? You know, a couple $100, right? Sort of at most.
If they're really, really working hard.
Yeah, well, I probably pull in 300-400 a month pretty consistently. So I've sold 25,000 copies now. I'm at 4.5 million pages on Kindle Unlimited. So I've done pretty well, but it's because of the tool that I built that I've done well. It's not because of me. Those tools were expensive. So I wanted to build a tool that actually worked well, because I tried some of those tools and they were really clunky and I didn't really like them very much. So I went out and built one, and said, hey, look, you know, here's a tool for $25 a month, right? You can use it, and has basically all the same features they've got. Well, which I don't understand how they're getting away with charging the rates they are. We even built out mobile apps on iOS and Android so you can use it mobile. But it it works with all the leading platforms. We're going to add Threads pretty soon. That's in the next month or two. But the seven leading platforms we're on already. The hashtag tool is a proprietary internal AI we use that basically analyzes the platforms you're posting to, reads your post, and says, here's the best hashtags to use with your post. And it's smart enough to say, hey, look, if you're like the other day, I was posting something that had Germany and France in it for some reason. I forget what it was. And it came up and said, oh, no, hashtag Europe. Right? Well, Europe was nowhere in my post, right? So the system is smart enough to know that you're talking about something in Europe, and it goes off and finds words that are semantically correct, and then gives you a ranking based on how many people are viewing that post or will view that post in the next couple of hours. And as a result, I get this week alone, I think I've had 500,000 impressions on Twitter alone. I can't call it X. I refuse to call it X. But I've had 550,000 impressions on YouTube alone, with an engagement rate over 6%. And the Twitter system-wide average is 0.05. On YouTube, I'm pulling 15% engagement, 16% engagement, and I'm gaining followers steadily. So what that engaged following lets you do is find people whose interest is the same as yours, or whatever your post is, and they will eventually follow you, and you will over time gain followers. You're not going to see a spike, but you'll see a consistent rise. So I'm getting, a couple percent rise a month.
And that's a thing that I think people misconstrue about marketing in the broad scheme. It's like, a good marketer will tell you up front, nothing that they do is going to work immediately. It's all about setting things up that over time, the algorithms learn to like you. They learned what you're about. They learn how to best serve the people that you want to connect with. And as long as that connection makes sense and it works, the algorithm will keep doing that forever. The problem is that people try to do things to game the algorithm. And when they game the algorithm, it means it's giving bad data to its users. And it never wants to do that.
And I can tell you from experience, because we analyze every single one of those algorithms all the time. So we have tools that actually go out and analyze those algorithms constantly. They're catching on to that, right? So if you're gaming the algorithm, there's now tools in there to say, oh, it'll flip a trigger and say, oh, you're gaming the algorithm. It'll start to massively downgrade your account. So it actually also has, at least X now has a sentiment analyzer in it. So if your responses to your posts are always largely negative, like people coming in telling you're an idiot and all this, it'll actually start to downgrade you as well. So if you're rage baiting, you're throwing stuff out there just to make people angry, it's not working the way it once did. It's actually going to hurt you in the long run, which that one I kind of appreciate, to be honest.
So. Oh, I can barely wrap my head around that one. It's like, isn't that most of the internet?
Well, I mean,
sure feels that way.
Pick on Elon all you want, but that one's actually kind of a good idea, right? So,
you mean my people aren't going to be pissed off every time they're on here?
Oh, I'm telling you, I had one this morning. I looked at a post the other day from Mr. Beast, of all people. He built 100 homes for the blind. And people kind of went after him like, oh my God, why is he doing this? Somebody else should do it. Government, why does a YouTuber do this? Why doesn't somebody else? I'm like, how about somebody tells the 26-year-old kid that just built 100 homes for the blind, thank you, instead of like going out and trying to fry him, right? That doesn't make any sense to me, but.
Well, yeah, that's a completely different conversation. I could get into the economics of why Mr. Beast is doing what Mr. Beast should be doing, and making a government do what Mr. Beast does would just be a huge waste of money. But
it would be for anybody else, right? But he does it, and then he kind of feeds it back into his channel.
Well, I made a comment on somebody's post the other day. I mean, he found a way to make it profitable to himself to do good. Like, that's the ideal situation.
And he doesn't stop doing good, right? I mean, on his birthday, he gave away 26 cars to people who didn't have enough money to buy a car.
Yeah, and I've heard some of the horror stories. I remember one of the big kerfluffles with him was because he, like, a manager at a store let it slip that he was talking about being there. And so a ton of extra people came expecting him to be there, and he didn't, because it became a security hazard at that point when people knew he'd be there. And then everyone got pissed off because, oh, they're going to have to pay for their groceries that week. And carts were left like just out, food, you know. And it's like, this has nothing to do with him. This is some asshole who kind of broke the confidence and frankly ruined a good thing.
Yeah, say what you want about him, but he's actually doing good stuff. And he's like 26, right? So he's doing. No, I looked it up. He actually is. But he just turned 26. And he's been at this for 10 years, which baffles my mind. But back to marketing. So the one thing also that I will, it took me a couple of years for creators and especially indie creators to understand, is your marketing strategy needs to go further than, hey, help me out and buy my book or buy my whatever. I see so many creators struggling, and what they do is say, hey, it would really help me if you'd buy a copy. Nobody cares but your mom, right?
That's actually something I did have thoughts on, is because one of the things I do, like I'm currently working on a marketing book of my own based around Dungeons and Dragons and teaching nerdy people like the basics of marketing. And one of the things that I do harp on is that marketing is relationship building. Now, how you start that relationship, you know, if you're using a technological tool like you offer, that's all fine and dandy. But the bottom line is you're trying to keep people happy with a thing that you do. And making a lot of friends that are influential isn't a bad idea. The problem is that you can't have people buying something for goodwill. People have to be buying something because they want the product. That's what, and that's a thing people look with, that use the Iron Age hashtag, I think, struggle with a lot, is that they're aiming for the other creators in the space and kind of living off the goodwill of the other guy who understands their plight. But they need to get that out of their heads. These are people that can help you in certain ways, perhaps educationally, perhaps putting you in front of other audiences, like with podcasting and reviews and things like that. But they're not your buyers. You need to go out and find those audiences that you connect with that are interested in that thing that you have. Like, because, you know, how long are you going to be able to live off your mom and your aunts buying your books? Eventually, they're not going to want to either. Goodwill can only go so far.
Oh, yeah. They're going to want free copies. Trust me.
Exactly.
And by the way, if you're writing a book, I will warn you, everyone you know is going to want a free copy of that book. So don't count on your friends coming out and buying a bunch of copies of it. Everybody you know is going to want a free copy. And that's not a bad thing. I've given a bunch of them away over the years, but one of the things that you'll also find is when you're selling books or things in the Dungeons and Dragons space, which I played since, I don't know, 1982 or something. And I see a lot of indie creators in that space struggle, is that you have to put something together that's quality, and nothing sells your stuff better than word of mouth, right? So if you put something together that's pure junk, people will talk. If you put something together that's really good, people will talk, but not as much. Right. People are much more prone to complain than they are to actually say anything positive. So quality matters.
I'm actually working on a video kind of in relation to that. It's that I hear so much complaining these days about like the Nerdrotics of the world and the, you know, EFAPs that all they do is complain about TV. And if they didn't complain and didn't watch these stupid shows, they'd start making good shows eventually. Now, aside from the economics of the fact that BlackRock, Vanguard, and State Street are going to ideologically pay for those things using your retirement funds until they, you know, go into ideological oblivion, it's just not true. Like, the bottom line is the reason that those people talk about what they talk about is because people are gravitate towards it. And like in marketing, the whole point you're trying to do is, because what we're doing is just disruption marketing, and you're stopping people doing something that they want to do. So the only way to do that is to enter the conversation they're having. And like, usually the conversation they're having is, I'm pissed off because I wasted time on this thing that I used to like. they're rarely thinking about the thing that they enjoyed, frankly. It's the old Milan Kundera and Bearable Lightness of Being. It's the times that are bad that shape you, not the times that are good.
Yeah. And it's like take the book industry, for instance. So I've thought for a while about, hey, should I go find a publisher or an agent or something? And part of the trouble is, unless you're an A-list author, you know, you still do your own marketing anyway. So all you're really doing is kind of handing percentages off to different people. And until you have people coming to you to represent you, it's almost not worth bothering with. So it's, for some people it is, but just in my space, it's not. The action thriller space, or in the serial killer space, which I wrote a serial killer book. The fact that I was getting divorced when I wrote the serial killer book is completely coincidental. My ex-wife is still alive. Didn't put any of it into action, but it was fun to research. But you know, when you go off to market these things, you have to think, you know, and I have people come after me on Twitter once in a while. It's like, oh, self-promotion. Oh my God. I'm like, if you're not going to promote yourself, nobody else will. Right. You have to get used to that. And it's the moment you start to try to self-promote, somebody's going to come along and be critical of you no matter what, because you've done something original and they haven't, and they're pissed off.
I enjoy the thing I made. I think others will enjoy it too. I have no problem telling people about it, period.
Yeah. If you're not passionate about it, how do you expect other people to be? And like, I saw this creator the other day who posted something like, hey, look, I've got a new thing out. I'm sorry I had to charge so much. It's $6. I'm like, dude, if you're apologizing over $6, your marketing plan is broken.
Oh, I remember. I commented on that because it just blew my mind. I'm like, I will never apologize for what I charge. I charge what I charge, and that's there for the people that want what I have, period.
Yeah. And if you sell copies, great. If not, you know, that's good too. And, you know, the other thing I will tell creators, that if you're thinking of getting into the creative field, especially in the book space, there are an infinite number of people who are going to come at you asking to get paid. There are cover artists, editor, beta readers who want to get paid. I mean, you name it. There are people out there who are going to try to tell you, you need their service and you got to pay them a whole bunch of money or your book is going to suck. And I've used them before. Beta readers, I don't use. I just don't. Partially because I want to tell the story I want to tell, and a beta reader tries to influence that story with something they want to see in it, and I don't care. I hate to sound arrogant about that, but I don't care. And one of my books has over 1,000 Amazon reviews with a 4.2 star average, I want to say. So I can tell a pretty decent story.
Well, I mean, I would imagine for someone who's as data driven as you are, you probably know why you're telling the story you're telling in the first place. You don't need anybody who's not as data driven mucking up the gears.
Yeah, exactly. And like in one of my books, I thought this was really funny. So the other thing you have to get used to, and this is off topic a little bit, but when you're a creator, you will get reviews that you look at and go, what the heck is this person smoking? And do they understand that the rule is puff, puff, pass, not puff, 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 puff some more? Because I get this one review on a book of mine called The Last World War, which is a book about a fictional nuclear war that hit the United States and parts of the Middle East. And somebody in the review section said, well, these guys clearly don't understand nuclear physics or combat injuries. I have a PhD in physics, and I worked in nuclear physics for a while, and my co-author is a combat medic who did tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. So my guess is we're pretty close. And the reviewer is not. But let's let that part go, right? So you have to be able to let these 1- and 2-star reviews just go. Some people are just going to leave no matter what, and just cope with it. So, you know, you're never going to get perfect fun.
Well, I mean, it's too easy to make enemies online anymore, that people will rage bait and, you know, send people just because you said something political they don't like, and now they got to, you know, send the people after you.
Yeah. Like I posted, like, speaking of politics, like I posted something the other day, about, I forget what it was, but somehow it was like not political at all. It was like something about puppy dogs or whatever. And somehow the comment section turned into politics. And I'm like, how the heck did that happen? I had to mute it. It just got to that point where it was nuts. Cause it went for like 60,000 views or something, and, had, you know, a couple hundred comments underneath it. And it all turned into massive politics. I don't know what it was something about one of the dog shelters or something. And, I was going to go adopt a puppy, and somebody was like, oh my God, the dog shelters. And it just turned into like a raging politics thing. And I'm like, dude, good Lord, whatever.
Yeah. That's interesting how that can turn.
Yeah. When you can take a puppy post and turn it into politics. But on the marketing side, you know, the one thing I can tell everybody is, you know, tools matter. If you're not used to marketing and you're not going to hire a professional, having the right tools and being persistent matters. Keeping the right tempo matters. You know, if you're going to post, you know, nobody wants, it's like, take social media, which is the only real marketing space left for creators. If the only posts you ever make are marketing posts, nobody's going to follow you. right? It's called social media. You need to be social. You need to talk about the subject matter that you're interested in. You know, I talk about Dungeons and Dragons and books and, well, my kids. And those are kind of my only three subjects. I will occasionally talk about puppies because I have a dog, or my tarantula because I have a tarantula. Sometimes I'll venture into, you know, Mr. Beast or something that Taylor Swift did because my daughter's into Taylor Swift and she rubs off on me by osmosis. But, you know, you will find people with similar interests. And when you find those people with similar interests, they tend to buy the same stuff you do.
One of the things I've been getting into is, as part of the book I'm working on, like, I actually have an actual character sheet that you fill out in chapter two. And the idea is it helps you take stock of where you are and the resources that you have available to you for promotion and marketing. But one of the things that I make sure everyone does on there is, you know, part of your character sheet is, who are you? What are the things that you're interested in? This is outside of writing. This is outside of any, like, I don't care. You're interested in heavy metal music, gardening, you know, whatever it is. And the reason I tell people to focus on this, because when you're going out and you're looking for people to talk to try and spread the word about whatever your current creation is, if you want to go and create media, going places that people have similar interests as you, they're probably going to have other interests as you too. That's just kind of the way human beings work. So when you go there and you're sure that podcast is 100,000 people and you're talking about heavy metal music, but you give that pitch to say, hey, go check out my book at the end of it, a greater than no percentage of that is going to say, hey, I'm interested. I like that guy. He kind of reminded me of me. I'm going to go see what the book's about. Like, that's the stuff that breaks people out of that, you know, talking strictly to other writers space. And so people they don't take advantage of it so often. It's frustrating.
And I will tell you that most writers are not going to buy your book. So I buy indie books because I read, you know, two books a week at this point. And I never look at whether or not it's indie or not. But if you're only marketing to other writers, you're really limiting your audience. So I'm not trying to criticize writers, because writers do tend to be active readers. But,
well, the bottom line is you're spending time writing and not reading. Like,
yeah. So the other thing, like, and we even built it into my app, is keep a calendar, right? You can wind up going 3 weeks and kind of forgetting to do any marketing. Keep a marketing calendar. We built one into the app. So it's like, you know, you can look on a particular day and see how you're doing. And the other thing is, and this sounds funny, but data matters, right? So look at your analytics on all the posts, or if you have a tool like the one I built, you can look at individual post analytics and say, okay, what posts got high engagement? What posts got terrible engagement? And guess what? The ones that got terrible engagement, don't do that anymore, right? do the ones that have high engagement. And when you get ones that have high engagement and then you realize, oh, my marketing posts aren't doing as well. Well, no, your marketing posts will never do as well as like a post about me and my daughter out walking my Jack Russell Terrier, right? It's just never going to do.
Once again, not what the platform is for.
It's not going to do as well, but it will do better. And the more engagement you have with your following, the more active your following is, the better your marketing post will do. So you might get 1 in 100 people that see it. When you're at 1,000 followers, that's sort of what, 10? But when you're at 10,000, 12,000, 30,000 followers, now more people have seen it. And the more people that share it, and that whole word of mouth thing actually matters. The more word of mouth you get, the better off you are. Because, you know, you can buy all the ads in the world you want. But think about the movie you were on the fence to see. So, like, think about when Sixth Sense came out. It did a much better second week than it did its first week. And its third week was even bigger. That had nothing to do with their marketing. It had to do with people going to work going, oh my God, did you see this movie called The Sixth Sense? All right. So word of mouth sold that movie. None of their marketing actually did. Most movies are all about opening weekend. That thing was about its third weekend. So word of mouth carried that film.
I would say word of mouth is why Signs happened.
Well, probably, but yeah, exactly. Cause that movie was weird. It was not, word of mouth is something that really makes a big difference. And, like, you know, I almost didn't go see the movie Avatar when it first came out, because I looked at the previews and I'm like, what the heck is this? And then I went to work. I was still at MIT. And the only thing anybody could tell me about it after they came out was, you got to see the special effects. I'm like, that's it. There's nobody had a comment other than the special effects were great. All right. So if you're going to go see it, you go see it just for that and you don't care. How many people have watched Avatar since it left the theater?
I mean, it makes a lot of money in theaters, so who knows?
Well, James Cameron made all his money in the theater, right? And he doesn't care. And now he's got a Disney thing. But
yeah,
my point is that that word of mouth carried people for that, and it's not going to carry it, you know, now. Whereas if somebody tells me, hey, have you thought about this movie or that movie and it's something from the 80s or 90s and I haven't seen it, I can find it on streaming. You'll watch it. But, you know, they're not marketing anymore. Yet I've had people come to me and suggest movies that are 20, 30 years old that I've gone and found.
And James Cameron is a great example of that, because even when we're talking, you know, in the micro level about this one movie, the bottom line is that James Cameron has a 40-year career at this point of making spectacles on film. So he has cultivated that word of mouth around him for years by constantly delivering on what he promised to deliver, which is spectacle. You know, Terminator 2 is known for the visuals. You go back and you watch The Abyss, as horrible as that movie was to make. God damn, it's fun to watch.
It is. The original Terminator, I mean, it's not. Yeah. You know, you get down. True Lies. I mean, come on. Titanic. Right?
I mean, it's big spectacle films. So, like, you know what you're going to get into with him, which only makes the word of mouth. Like, when someone says, comes back as, oh my God, you have to watch it. It's like, oh, that makes sense. So now it's building on itself.
Yeah. And also, it's like, you know, other people who are word of mouth, it's like, you take Stephen King, for instance. Stephen King can, like, put his name on a napkin and wind up selling it as a piece of literature, right? But when you mention a Stephen King movie, everybody's like, okay, they're hit or miss, really. How is this one? Yeah.
Well, I think I would argue Stephen King has kind of also done that to himself in the writing area over time, because he's starting to write a few more negatives than positives in my calculations.
Yeah, he's had a few clunkers lately, but he's also...
I will always bring it back to From a Buick.
Yeah, well, that's true. But he's also in his 70s now, so you got to look at it like, all right, he's still actively working and he's in his 70s. You got to let that...
Honestly, I think he'd probably do even better if he just stayed off Twitter.
Probably, but I don't think he cares. He makes like $40 million a year whether or not he works at all, so...
Well, I always laugh because it's that there's that Family Guy joke with Stephen King, and it's where he goes to the publisher and he's like, ah, I got a new book. A New England family is terrified, and he just looks around the room and he's like, a lamp monster. And he's like, you're not even trying anymore, are you, Stephen? Ooh. When can we have it?
Actually, I saw him doing a speech at the National Book Club or something. I was watching on YouTube a couple days ago. And he said something to the effect of, he's like, you know, every once in a while I get a critic in my face going, you know, you're not a very good writer. Your ass should be like, you know, off on the sidelines. He goes, no, my ass is in a Mercedes. I'm like, okay, that's pretty funny.
Well, and the bottom line is, like, whatever you do think of him, his work for a very long time is undeniable. Like, I'm a critic of a lot of what he does now, and some of it's okay, some of it's bad. But there's enough good jam-packed in those first couple decades of his career that he gets a pass. You know, there's always, I guess, even that hope that maybe he's going to write one more real banger before he goes out.
I mean, how many people in the modern audience would pick up a book the size of 11/22/63 if it was not for word of mouth? Right? Because I looked, even I'm an avid reader. I will pick up just about any book and read it. And even I looked at that one and went, oh my God. somebody who read it, who I trusted, was like, no, it's really good. I was like, all right. So I went and got a copy of it. I was like, okay, this is actually really good. You know, so it was one of his, you know, ones that actually hit really well. I think his career peaked with Bag of Bones and kind of has been hit or miss since then. But
I would actually go fully with you on that one there. Now, what I like if his personally, it goes back probably further than that, but like, it's hard to, you know, even the Mr. Mercedes stories, I kind of came to the party late on them because I was so kind of done with him by that point. And like, oh, these are genuinely interesting.
Well, yeah, but he's a marketing machine, right? Because he's cultivated his audience, and now he could just kind of stand up and go, "Oh, I have a book." Boom, you know.
Well, he's one of the few creators, and I think it's harder to do this now, like where you can be a blue chip stock of a creator. Like you've built the brand that, you know, you're a Pepsi, you're a Coke within your field, and I don't know that the whole way marketing even works now. Like people just trust corporates, everything so little that anything that stinks of corporate just, yeah, no, I don't trust that anymore because we've been burned for so long. So, well, I want to thank you so much for coming on. This has been an awesome conversation. Before we kind of kick out of here, why don't you tell us a little bit where people can go pick up your books and where they can pick up this app? Because I'm going to be honest, the way you're talking about it, I want to go give it a test drive myself.
Well, my books are on Amazon. You just type in my last name and it comes up like a rash. It's pretty easy to find. Forest of Assassins, if you're into action thrillers, has the highest ranking of any of my books right now. It's a book about Navy SEALs in Vietnam, but it predates us admitting we had combat troops in Vietnam. The setting of the book predates the Gulf of Tonkin incident. And it predates us admitting Navy SEALs existed. So it had the whole sort of mystery of who are these guys and, you know, what are they doing? And nobody really knew. So it was the original SEAL team. Some SEAL Team 1 members who were that original team read it. One of them did and said, "Hey, you give me flashbacks. Thanks." I'm like, "Okay, that's weird. What?" It's like, no, you hit it exactly right. I was like, "Oh, cool. That's kind of nice for somebody who was actually on that team to go, that was good." So it was a nice compliment. If you like serial killers, I actually turned a Catholic priest into a serial killer in a book called The Diocese Dilemma. He took eye for an eye a little bit further than most people do. It got really brutal for a while. And I am not sorry at all about what we did to that child molester. But if you find the app, it's just o4a.com. It's very simple to use. All of our people, if you contact them for help, are actually here in the United States. So you're not dealing with a click farm over in India someplace. It's all US based. 60 days are free. So you get to use the app for 2 months with no charge. After that, the basic level is like $25 a month. So it's not expensive.
That is some very, very good risk reduction there.
Well, it is. That was the point. We wanted to kind of make it so that you can try it, see if you like it. And you're not like trying to do it in 2 weeks. Like you can actually do it for a while. And get away with it. And $24.99, and you don't have to put a credit card in for the trial. So it's, you know, we're not going to say, "Oh, put the credit card in," and we just won't remember. We'll just kind of forget to tell you when it's about to charge you, right? The app actually has a clock in the upper corner that tells you how many days your trial has left, and it kind of bounces around to tell you how long.
Reminds me of Reaper.fm.
Well, we try to actually be sort of audience nice, right? So. If you need help, actually, when you sign up, one of our ops team will reach out to you and say, "Hey, look, do you want us to run a demo?" And they'll actually log in and run a demo with you. And they're not going to try to sell you anything. They just want to make sure you know how to use it.
Well, getting people that first win. It's one of the first things you want to do in marketing. Make them feel good about the purchase. Make them feel good. Like, hey, have good things to say about it. And if they can't figure out how to use it, well, then that means they're walking right around with negative feedback, and you don't want that.
And speaking of that, so one of the problems with a lot of these marketing tools is the user interface, right? Is the UI is clunky, it's hard to use, it's a pain. We probably spent as much money on the user interface as we've done on just about anything. And every one of our users who we solicited feedback from, one of the first things they mention is the UI. And they're always, we have not had a single complaint about it. We've had a couple suggestions on how it could be better, and we actually implemented them, pretty quickly, actually. We take user feedback on adding, functionality all the time. For instance, we recently just added, Instagram collaboration. So you can do like an Instagram collaboration through the app. And we're adding tagging pretty soon, which is like an automated tagging. So you can like set up a template, say, "I want to tag these accounts across different things," and you can load your template every time if you tag similar ones constantly. We're adding threads as well. You can actually run paid ads through it too. So you don't have to go to the individual platforms to do that.
I mean, as a guy, you know, from the field, like I can tell you how let down I've been by, every single one of those programs I have ever used that's supposed to do this. Like they're none of them are good, and the ones that like are close are way too expensive.
Hootsuite is what, $500 a month or something now? They're way up there.
It's for like, I think with an account where you can manage anything reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah. And ours is $25. And unlike a lot of the competition, our mobile apps are, and this is going to sound really down in the weeds techie, but our mobile apps are actually native apps built in the iOS, not like a wrapper on the website. It's actually a native app for both iOS and Android. Which basically means it won't crash, right? So the apps you see crash and have problems all the time are what's called a web wrapper, and they're not very good. So we went to the time and expense to actually build real apps in both iOS and Android. And anything you can do on the web, you can do on the mobile app. And none of our competitors can make that same claim. So you can be on your mobile phone out at Half Price Books, which I've done, and you know, stand there and post a big picture of the aisle and get it hashtagged properly all through the app, and you don't have to deal with it. And if your media file works, you can actually run one post to every platform out there. So you can send the same post to Twitter and Instagram and Facebook if you want, and not have to write it three times. It lets you select, you know, one or more platforms you send it to. So
something that could do that even halfway decent would just the amount of time that would save me in a week would be amazing. Give it a look.
It's free. You can't beat free. So you know, for at least 2 months anyway. After that, you could tag. So you get 2 months for free.
Well, thank you again, Tim, so much for coming on today.
Oh, no problem.
Do you have a quick website anyone can go to again, one more time?
You go to o4a.com and check out the company website, or you go to timothyimholt.com to find all my books and other ramblings. And I'm always around on social media, so I'm pretty easy to find.
He is always around on social media. I enjoy commenting on his posts with relative frequency, folks. So,
well, everybody have a good one.
Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironagemarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.